Good evening, Ketchikan and Southern Southeast Alaska. Welcome to Book Talk. My name is Charlotte Glover, and I'll be your host for the next half hour, bringing you the best in books from the Ketchikan Public Library. Good evening and welcome to Book Talk for this snowy Thursday, January the 26th. And it's like a picture postcard up here at the studios of KRBD, looking out at the gorgeous white snow-covered Deer Mountain and the streets beyond. Really lovely. The hill was just fine. Actually, Forest Avenue and Baden were better than some of the surface streets down below. So the city crews are doing a great job keeping the access clear up here. I know you're worried about that because you want to be able to get to the new library in a few months. Not a problem. Let's take a look at what's happening at the library. It's a big weekend for us. Friday night, the Teen Advisory Group invites teens ages 13 to 19 only to an evening of Studio Ghibli cosplay beginning at 6:30 p.m. Studio Ghibli, of course, is the world-famous animation studio founded in 1985 by Miyazaki and Takata. It's famous for films such as Spirited Away, Howl's Moving Castle, My Neighbor Totoro, etc. Cosplay, of course, is short for costume play, so it's a type of performance art in which people are encouraged to wear costumes to represent characters or ideas from manga, anime, comic books, video games, graphic novels. Of course, there's going to be a film, food, and lots of fun. Teens ages 13 to 19, Studio Ghibli cosplay. That's tomorrow night at 6:30 p.m. Then Saturday, one of our marquee events for the year, the Fancy Nancy and Ned Party. Who's Ned? Nancy's imaginary brother, of course, because we want boys to feel welcome as well. But to be honest, this is a girly girl gig starting at 3 p.m. on Saturday. Inspired by the best-selling Fancy Nancy books, this party features incredible sweet treats, a unique craft, and a runway fashion show. There will be prizes for over-the-top fancy wear, so be creative. It's going to be a good time, and it's our fourth annual Fancy Nancy party. We are working on the February press release, and I'll leave that for next week, but just to let you know, we will be closed for 3 days around Valentine's Day to do inventory, and we're looking forward to a visit from author Sneed Colliard. And Debbie Dahl Edwardson's moving to March, it looks like. She had her dates completely messed up. So Sneed Colliard will be our next author February 29th. He's not a household word, but he is an amazing writer, researcher who's written about whale biologists, invasive species, about marsupials, about birds, about animal teeth, so many different kinds of science and outdoor adventure topics. He's a really, really dynamic speaker, has amazing slides of his travels around the world that inform and inspire his writing. So really going to do everything we can to encourage you, especially if you're working in education, if you have young children in your life, if you love the outdoors, to come see Sneed Colliard III. He's from Missoula, Montana. He's a heck of a great writer. February 29th, 6:30 p.m. Really, really want to get some interest there and some turnout. You know, not all these authors can be household names, and yet he's written over 50 books, okay? He's got to know a few things. So mark your calendars for that later in February on Leap Day, and as a matter of fact. So let's leap for Sneed Colliard on Leap Day. There we go. I didn't quite get the music cued quite right. It's very challenging sometimes to run all these buttons. Anyway, we're going to focus on literature for young people during today's show because it is the most important week in young people's literature. It's the week that the American Library Association announced the 2012 Youth Media Award winners. They did that Monday morning from Dallas, Texas, where the librarians are meeting. And the most prestigious award for literature for young children is called the John Newbery Medal. They've been giving this out for like 75 years, and it means basically your book will never go out of print and that you're going to sell a gazillion copies because every library in the country will have to have at least one, if not more. Well, Dead End in Norvelt, written by Jack Gantos, is the 2012 Newbery Medal winner. It's a historical fiction. I understand it's set in the 60s, and he's pretty excited to get the Newbery. Then two Newbery Honor books were also named, Inside Out and Back Again, written by Thana Lai, which we'll focus on today, and Breaking Stalin's Nose by Eugene Yelchin. Now, the Randolph Caldecott Medal is the most prestigious award in the country for illustrations. It's for the artist of the most distinguished American picture book for children. This year, it was won by Chris Rashka. It's his second win. He has won for A Ball for Daisy. Three honor books were named, Blackout, written and illustrated by John Rocco, Grandpa Green, written and illustrated by Lane Smith, and Me, Jane, about Jane Goodall, illustrated and written by Patrick McDonnell. How about the Michael Prince Award? This is a fairly new award. I would say it's 10, 12 years old, and it's for literature for young adults, teen literature, basically. Where Things Come Back, a debut novel written by John Corey Whaley, is the winner, and I had ordered myself a copy. I want to say it's about a young man growing up in Alabama. Why We Broke Up by Daniel Handler, otherwise known as Lemony Snicket, and Mara Kalman, the great illustrator, is one of the Prince Honor books. The other Prince Honor books are The Returning by Christine Hinwood, Jasper Jones by Craig Sylvie, and The Scorpio Races by Maggie Stiefeder, which was an early favorite for the Prince Award. The Coretta Scott King Book Award, recognizing an African-American author and illustrator of outstanding books for children and young adults. Kadir Nelson took that award for Heart and Soul, A Story of America and African-Americans. And the Illustrator Award went to Shane Evans, illustrator and author of Underground, Finding the Light to Freedom. So the Alex Awards are also really interesting. They're for the best adult books that appeal to teen audiences. You can look those up if you want. There's 10, but I always find that a great place for teens who are reading eagerly and widely. And the Margaret A. Edwards Award for Lifetime Achievement in Writing for Young Adults went to Susan Cooper. Her books include The Dark is Rising Sequence, Oversea Under Stone, The Dark is Rising, Greenwich, The Gray King, and Silver on the Tree. She is universally beloved. And the Puerto Bel Prix Award, honoring a Latino writer and illustrator. I guess they won't be reading in Tucson. I just heard about what was going on in Arizona, where some school district was, you know, saying that it was now illegal to read books by Hispanic Americans and Native Americans, and all of my brain was just short-circuiting. I couldn't even comprehend such stupidity. Being from New Mexico, I was joking on Facebook this week that in my state, I think we've passed a law that just the opposite, that you must read as many books as possible by Hispanic writers and Native Americans. And the other side of my brain just kept screaming, Sherman Alexie, Sherman Alexie. Like, what? How could you not have him on every curriculum? I don't know. I have to get a grip on what's happening in Arizona because, to tell you the truth, I read the stories and they sound like science fiction to me. I can't comprehend what is going on down there. If you haven't heard it, I mean, it is. There's a school district or a state. Is it the whole state saying that they're yanking all the multicultural curriculum and you can't read these books in schools? And I mean, it it just doesn't seem real to me. I can't even absorb such stupidity. So anyway, let's celebrate today the Purabelpri Award under the Mesquite, written by Guadalupe Garcia McCall, and Hurricane Dancers, the First Caribbean Pirate Shipwreck by Margarita Engel, and Maximilian and the Mystery of the Guardian Angel, a bilingual lucha libre thriller by Xavier Garza. Took some awards. Yeah, the other side of my brain was shouting, Sandra Cisneros! How could you have a world without Sandra Cisneros? I mean, oy, oy, oy. I need to spend some time and actually do some serious reading about what's happening in Arizona, because it's like I just had to look away. I had to look away. It was too weird for words. So just before the Newbery and Caldecott winners were announced, there was more good news in the world of children's literature. A week or so ago at the Jefferson Building of the Library of Congress, author Walter Dean Myers was sworn in as the National Ambassador for Young People's Literature. He's the third author to hold this position. John Shishka was the first, followed by the universally beloved Katherine Patterson. At his inauguration, Myers opened with a story about a conversation he had with two men. One of the men pointed out he had a lot in common with Myers. They both played basketball. They both played the saxophone. They grew up on the streets. Myers agreed there were some similarities, but there was one big difference. We were in a maximum security prison, Myers pointed out, and I'm going home. But the conversation stayed with Myers. He grew up in a foster home. He dropped out of school. It was a slippery slope. Why didn't I go the way he went? Myers asked himself. Because I could read. I had the ability to take advantage of every opportunity that came my way. The prisoner could not read. Most of Myers' accolades, 2 Newbery Honors, 5 Coretta Scott King Awards, 2 National Book Award finalists, the Margaret Edwards Award, were accrued for his young adult books. But Myers wants to drive home the message that parents need to read to their babies. Read to the children at 3 months, 6 months, 9 months old, he said, citing a new study showing that when they start school at 5 years old, most kids are already far behind. One of his other goals, reading has to become cool for boys, he said. Myers placing blocks of wood under his bed legs to raise it up and make room for all the comics he kept hidden under there. His mother didn't approve of comics. His platform as an ambassador, reading is not optional. He discussed his goals at length on NPR's Morning Edition. So here's another great story about Walter Dean Myers. For years, it said, he was puzzled and hurt by his adopted father's apparent lack of interest in his books. I thought through my entire life he didn't like my writing, Myers recalls. It was only after he died and I was going through some of his papers and saw that he put X's to sign his name that I understood. He couldn't read. He didn't want to tell me that, and it was a barrier throughout our lives together. And again, Myers summed up his ambassador's platform phrase, reading is not optional. I'm skipping ahead here. If you are not proficient in reading, it seems to me you're risking a hard life, Myers said in an interview. Unfortunately, it seems as if people are seeing reading as an adjunct activity. But as I see it, if you can't read well, you will not do well. And so we've got quite a firecracker representing children's literature in Washington, D.C. and beyond. He gets a little bit of money to go out and spread the gospel of reading. Myers was born in West Virginia. His mother died when he was quite young, and his father approved his adoption by a couple named Florence and Herbert Dean. Myers moved with them to Harlem, where his adopted father worked as a janitor and his mother cleaned houses. Myers was a bright child who loved books and reading. I think I was born reading, he said. I was a good reader, and I read books that were beyond my culture, but I had the skills to do so. And unfortunately, Meyer's home life disintegrated when he was a teenager as his adopted father sunk into depression and his adopted mother's alcoholism took over her life. Meyer's dropped out of a top public high school, Stuyvesant High, and enlisted in the Army on his 17th birthday. After his Army service, Meyer's worked in a number of different jobs, but also began to write. And won't list the awards again. He said, overall, Meyer said he's thrilled with the way his life has turned out. This is such a good life, he said. So this year, out of nowhere, has come a new voice in children's literature, Thanh Lai, who was born in 1965 in Vietnam. She and I are almost the same age. I just had a birthday yesterday, 1966. Anyway, she says she was born in Vietnam in 1965, where life was good. I went to school, ate lots of snacks, was top dog in my class, and was the youngest of nine children. Yes, I know, nine, but it was wartime, and people were told to have lots of babies. On April 30th, 1975, North Vietnam, the communist side, won the war, and my family and I, living in Saigon, South Vietnam, scrambled on a Navy ship and ended up in Montgomery, Alabama. Why? Believe me, we don't know about Alabama to choose it, but to enter the United States, refugees had to have a sponsor. The man who had the nerve to take on all of us, 10 in all, lived in Alabama. Life got more complicated, with me not speaking English and never having tasted a hot dog. Add to that my looks. I was the first real-life Asian my classmates had ever seen. It took about a decade to get acclimated and to learn grammatically correct English. By then, we'd moved to Fort Worth, Texas, where I went to high school. I received a degree in journalism from University of Texas, Austin. I covered the cop beat at the Orange County Register in California for 2 years. I try to read a novel a night. As soon as my daughter goes down, I read. If I love the novel, I read every word until I finish it. If not so much, I flip and get the essence of what the writer is doing. I get to write Tuesdays through Fridays, usually. Something always comes up, but I can count on 15 solid hours a week to sit there and see what happens. I have a garden. I throw seeds down and see what comes up. Usually the tomatoes and kale win. And I have raspberry bushes in tubs, making it easier to water. I salivate over the idea of having a chicken coop, just three hens, quiet and productive. So far, I just read about other people raising chickens in the city, in the suburbs. I'm plodding. And I exercise because I'm not really meant to sit still. And so far, writing is all about sitting still. I bike 10 miles to teach. Otherwise, I try to run a little. Then I go home and eat too much. So Thanh Lai is an American writer of children's literature who recently won the 2011 National Book Award for Young People's Literature, and this week her book Inside Out and Back Again was named the 2012 Newbery Honor Book. She has her degree in journalism, as we mentioned, from University of Texas, but also has an MFA from New York University and teaches at the New School, and she's been a teacher for quite a number of years. So her book that we'll feature now, Inside Out and Back Again, is written in verse, like the much-beloved Karen Hess, who did, of course, Aleutian Sparrow, set here in Ketchikan. If you're a fan of that book, you'll find much to love here about a young girl in Saigon with the, you know, living in poverty but with a loving family, a missing father causing tremendous grief to the family, and a lack of food making their lives harder and harder. As the war continues and then ends, they decide to make a run from Saigon and board a ship headed towards America, where they eventually end up in Alabama. This book is clearly autobiographical. It is beautifully, beautifully written, again in the way of Aleutian Sparrow, told in verse, and clearly that is a form that Thanh Lai just excels at. And so it's deeply personal, very moving, and accessible to everyone because of the way it's written. We're right on the boat with her, idling out in the ocean, Inside Out and Back Again. Thanh Lai's much acclaimed award-winning children's book debut this year, or you should say young people's book. This book is timeless, ageless. Routine. Mother cannot allow idle children, hers or anyone else's. After 1 week on the ship, Brother Kwong begins English lessons. I wish he would keep it to, how are you? This is a pen. But when an adult is not there, he says, we must consider the shame of abandoning our own country and begging toward the unknown, where we will all begin again at the lowest level on the social scale. It's better in the afternoons with Brother Vu, who just wants us to do front kicks and back kicks, at times adding 1-2 punches. Brother Coy gets to monitor lines for the bathrooms, where bottoms stick out to the sea, behind blankets blowing in the wind. When not in class, I have to stay within sight of Mother like a baby. Mother gives me her writing pad, right tiny, there's but one pad. Writing becomes boring, so I draw over my words. Pouches of pan-fried shredded coconut, tamarind paste on banana leaf, steamed corn on the cob, rounds of fried dough, wedges of pineapple on a stick, and of course cubes of papaya, tender and shiny. Mother smooths back my hair, knowing the pain of a girl who loves snacks but is stranded on a ship. May 12th, once new. Water, water, water everywhere, making me think land is just something I once knew, like napping on a hammock, bathing without salt, watching Mother write, laughing for no reason, kicking up powdery dirt, and wearing clean night clothes, smelling of the sun. Brother Coy's secret. Brother Coy stinks. We can't ignore it. He stews and sweats in a jacket he won't take off. Forced to sponge wipe twice a day, he wraps the jacket around his waist. He keeps clutching something in the left pocket where the stench grows. Neighbors complain, even the ones 8 mats away, saying it's bad enough being trapped in putrid hot air made from fermented bodies and oily sweat. Must everybody also endure something rotten? Finally, Brother Vu holds Brother Coy down and forces him to open his hand. A flattened chick lies crooked, neck dangling off his palm. The chick had not a chance after we shoved for hours to board. Brother Coy screams, kicks everything off our mats. Brother Quang carries him above deck, quiet. May 13th, last respects. After 2 weeks at sea, the commander calls all of us above deck for a formal lowering of our yellow flag with 3 red stripes. South Vietnam no longer exists. One woman tries to throw herself overboard, screaming that without a country she cannot live. As they wrestle her down, a man stabs his heart with a toothbrush. I don't know them, so their pain seems unreal, next to Brother Kwai's, whose eyes are as wild as those of his broken chick. I hold his hand. Come with me. He doesn't resist. Alone at the back of the ship, I open Mother's white handkerchief. Inside lies my mouse-bitten doll, her arms wrapped around the limp, fuzzy body of his chick. I tie it all into a bundle. Brother Coy nods, and I smile. But I regret not having my doll as soon as the white bundle sinks into the sea. One engine. In the middle of the night, our ship stops. Mother hugs me, hearts drumming as one. If the communists catch us fleeing, it's 1,000,000 times worse than staying at home. After many shouts and much time, the ship moves forward with just one engine. My mother would not release me. The commander says, Thailand is much farther on one engine. It was risky to take the river route. We escaped bombs but missed the rescue ships. The commander decides the ration is now 1/2 clump of rice, only at morning and night, and 1 cup of water all day. Sip, he says, and don't waste strength moving around, because it's impossible to predict how much longer we will be floating. The moon. During the day, the deck belongs to men and children. At nightfall, women make their way up. In single files, they sponge bathe and relieve themselves behind blanket curtains. I always stand in line with Mother. Every night, she points upward. At least the moon remains unchanged. Your father could be looking at the same round moon. He may already understand we will wait for him across the world. I feel guilty having not once thought of Father. I can't wish for him to appear until I know where we'll be. May 18th. A kiss. The horn on our ship blows and blows, waking everyone from a week-long nap. A sure answer, honk, honk, seems close enough and real enough to call everyone on deck. A gigantic ship with an American flag moves closer. Men in white uniform wave and smile. Our commander wears his navy jacket and hat, white and crisp. Now I realize why I like him so much. In uniform, he looks just like Father. He boards the other ship, salutes, and shakes hands with a man whose hair grows on his face, not on his head, in the color of flames. I had not known such hair was possible. We clap and clap as the ships draw together and kiss. Boxes and boxes pass on to our deck. Oranges, apples, bananas, cold, sweet, bubbly drinks, chocolate drops, fruity gum. The American ship tows ours with a steel braid thick as my body. Our rescue now certain, the party blossoms as food suddenly comes up from below. Ramen noodles, beef jerky, dried shrimp, butter biscuits, tamarind pods, canned fish, and drums of real water. Mother says people share when they know they have escaped hunger. Shouldn't people share because there is hunger? That night I stand behind, blowing blankets, and pour fresh water all over my skin. How sweet water tastes, even when it's mixed with soap. May 24th, golden fuzz, water, water still everywhere, but in the distance appears a black dot. We are told to pack our crisscrossed packs and line up in a single file. 20 at a time board a motorboat heading toward the dot. An arm extends to help us board, an arm hairy with fuzz. I touch it, so real and long, not knowing if I will have another chance to touch golden fuzz. I pluck one hair. Mother slaps my hand. Brother Quang speaks quickly in the language I must learn. The fuzzy man laughs. I'm grateful the boat starts to rock, so Mother hasn't the composure to scold me, not just yet. I roll my fuzzy souvenir between my thumb and finger and can't help but smile. May 26th, Tent City. We've landed on an island called Guam, which no one can pronounce except Brother Quang, who becomes translator for all. Many others arrived before us and are living in green tents and sleeping on cots. We eat inside a huge tent where Brother Vu becomes head chef, heating up cans of beef and potatoes tasting like salty vomit. We eat only canned fruit and thick syrup, and everyone wants extras, but we only get a cup. Brother Vu somehow brings home a huge can, pumping it to work out his arm muscles. We eat straight from the can as I search for cherries and grapes. May 28th, life in waiting. A routine starts as soon as we settle into our tent. Camp workers teach us English mornings and afternoons. Evenings we have to ourselves. We watch movies outdoors with images projected onto a white sheet. Brother Quang translates into a microphone, his voice sad and slow. If it's a young cowboy like Clint Eastwood, everyone cheers. If it's an old cowboy like John Wayne, most of us boo and go swimming. The Disney cartoons lure out the girls who always surround Brother Vu, begging him to break yet another piece of wood. I can still hear them begging when I go sit with Brother Coy, who rarely speaks anymore, but I'm happy to be near him. Lovely section of the story Inside Out and Back Again by Thanah Lai that won the National Book Award for Young People's Literature earlier this year and was just this week named the Newbery runner-up for the finest literature for young people in America. This is the true story of how she witnessed the end of the Vietnam War at age 10 and fled to Alabama with her family, where she had to learn English and find out what life is like as an American. She said she wrote this book for her nieces and nephews who knew their family history but couldn't imagine the noises and smells of Vietnam and the daily challenges of starting over in a new land. This is a wonderful, wonderful book by a marvelous new voice in children's literature. Inside Out and Back Again, Thanah Lai. That's it for Book Talk for this evening. Thanks for joining me. Stay tuned right here to KRBD Ketchikan, your community-supported Coast Alaska station. We've got news from National Public Radio and Babelfish coming up next. Good night.